Hi, welcome to another Writers After Dark. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are here because good stories start with the writers, because wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guest today is the eponymous, I guess, is that the right word? M.A. Carrick, who is a conglomeration collaboration between Marie Brennan and Alyse Helms. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And their collaborative tome, I'm going to go with, tome is the right
brick
word for this book.
Doorstop.
Yeah. It's not as heavy as the complete works of Shakespeare, which has been known to kill chihuahuas from accidentally falling off tables. But
I thought that was Brandon Sanderson's novels. That's actually where I heard the term chihuahua killer was Mary Robinette Cole referring to his books. So I'm not just like slagging on him. It's where I heard it.
Oh, no. There is a complete works of Shakespeare annotated by Isaac Asimov that will sprain an elbow. But your book is The Mask of Mirrors, which the first description I read of it was political intrigue, family revenge, magic, and mischief in the form of thievery. And I'm like, ooh, tell me more.
I feel like I need to write that down because I hate trying to do the elevator pitch, and that's not bad.
Yeah.
You are welcome.
I think your version of the elevator pitch should just be your rattling off of the Princess
Bride.
Yeah,
this is true. Like when I have to give a summation, I just fall back on quoting the Princess Bride. This is true.
So what is the elevator pitch?
How about Alyse can give the formal version and I'll give mine?
Okay.
Sounds good. All right, so the formal version is The Mask of Mirrors is about Alta Renata Viraudux, who is actually a Renzelinskaya, a con artist who has infiltrated the nobility in an attempt to set herself up with a cushy life, only to run afoul of the Rook, a dread pirate Roberts style of vigilante whose mission is to oppose the nobility, including the increasingly popular Alta Renata. Capers, banter, double crosses, and hijinks ensue. So think The Scarlet Pimpernel meets Leigh Bardugo's Six of Crows with a dash of Scott Lynch's Lies of Loch Lamora.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the formal one. And you can tell there's some Princess Bride fingerprints on, well, let's face it, probably everything I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I get pushed into a corner and told I have to summarize it, I just say, fencing, fighting, torture, revenge, giants, monsters, chases, escape, true love, miracles. Hopefully it doesn't sound too bad and you can, you know, manage to stay awake.
Yeah.
Are there any castles being stormed?
We don't really have any castles in it, exactly. There's the Charter House. Ren kind of metaphorically storms the Charter House. She breaks into a house. Does that count?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Yeah, so there are a couple fancy manor houses that get stormed, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
If by storm, we mean sneaking in disguise. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ah. Okay, so
she's not much of one for frontal assault.
So
no.
This basically is an epic fantasy episode of Leverage, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
There's a chunk of that.
Got a lot of that, yeah.
So first off, how did you come up with this delightful premise, and how did it become a collaboration?
The answer is basically that the collaboration came before the premise in a way, sort of. Like it gets complicated. Yeah. We're not really hiding the fact that this actually came out of a role-playing game. It's a game that Alyse is running, which I'm a player in, and there came a point during the game where there was something that we wanted to do with my character and one of the NPCs that wasn't really going to involve any of the other players. So we thought it would be kind of boring for them to just sit around and not be involved. Plus, it was kind of a caper, and it's actually hard to run good capers in most role-playing game systems because you don't want the, oh, well, you know, I had a great plan, but then I rolled badly and there goes that, you know. And so what we decided was that we were going to write it as a scene, like a bit of fanfic, essentially, for the game. So we pop open a Google Doc and we start writing. I'm basically writing my PC. Alyse is writing the NPCs. We kind of swap off here and there repeatedly throughout the course of the scene. And that was fun. So we wrote some other scenes about this side stuff that my character was doing. And then we wrote more scenes. And then I stopped and counted and went, holy shit, we've written like 50,000 words of fanfic for this game.
A very dedicated GM.
Wow.
Don't pretend otherwise.
I do.
So this made us decide that we should write a novel together. And we spent a while sort of brainstorming tropes that each of us liked and, you know, looking for intersections between those and how to build a plot out of it until eventually I stopped and went, is there a reason we're not just filing the serial numbers off what we have already?
And the answer was actually yes, because you were working on something that bore some similarities and I was working on something that bore some similarities, but we kind of looked at it and went, we can change those other things and tell this story instead, because this is a really cool story that we've already worked out a lot of the beats on and a lot of the character emotional development on.
Yeah, that was really the core of it, that like we had these characters and their relationships that we were really already invested in, and it was sort of, why should we start from a dead halt with a new idea when we have this shiny thing sitting right there? So what we did was we took those characters and the arcs of their relationships with each other, pulled that out, and built a new setting and a new plot. I at one point was referring to it as an invertebrate novel, because we had like all of these meat on, like meat for it, but no bone to put the meat on. Like it needs a spine to hold it all together. So let's go find a spine.
And so a lot of our plotting actually ended up being, all right, we know we want this emotional kind of thing to occur, this emotional change to take place. How do we make a plot that is going to do that in the same way that it did in the game, but with different moving parts, so that it emotionally and character-wise makes sense, but is coming from a different place that's specific to the novel. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
I think this is the first time I've heard of someone writing a novel based on a side quest from a role-playing game that wasn't actually played. I've heard, you know, you hear so many stories of, yeah, this started out as a quest in our game, but this is a side hustle in a game that never actually got played.
The effects of it did get played, because it was mostly a lot of the downtime stuff of like, oh, the characters interacting and maybe doing a caper while they're doing it. And those characters did still appear in the game, and the effects of all of that came in. But it was like, this whole side thing that we're like, we're just getting deep down into the feelings of the characters in ways that don't really suit an actual game session.
Yeah.
I have to ask, how have the events in the book affected the players, the actual game?
There's been a few things where we're like, okay, we're just, because we renamed like certain characters and certain elements that we needed. And so we've kind of come back and been like, okay, dear players of the game, that side character who was named Thorn, he's just Sedge now, accept it.
Yeah, it's because we can't remember. And, you know, I'll often refer to one particular group of people as Vresenians rather than, you know, what they were originally called in the game, because I just can't remember anymore what the game version was.
Which, conveniently, this happened right around the time that our characters had gone back like 10,000 years or something to, like, you know, the ancient before times. And Alyss likes closed loop time travel, we're sort of justifying anything that we're like, okay, we're just renaming that character now, as clearly we accidentally changed some tiny thing in the past and the effects of that have rippled forward. So we had a ready-made plot device to cover it up.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So it's like this whole side adventure, I gotta ask, did this change any maps in the game at all?
Maps, no.
Yeah, I think we've kind of like separated them out at this point. I know that there's one big burning question that Marie has about her game version of the character that I kind of had to tell her that the version that occurs in the game is not one that we can use for the book, because it just won't fit.
And that's so fine. It means I don't get a spoiler for the game. Yeah.
So she doesn't get a spoiler for the game, and we can go ahead and answer that question for the book in a different way that would work for the book. Yeah.
And I don't think it's a problem to say Ren is half Vresenian, half Sateran Leganti, something, you know, from the north, and she has no idea who her father is, and for the most part doesn't particularly care, but of course as writers you sit there going, well, clearly we're going to have to answer that eventually. And so, in the game she still does not know who her father is, and it's going to be something completely different than what we came up with for the novel.
Yeah.
Cool. Very, very cool. So how does your collaboration work? Do you each, like, do you switch off chapter by chapter? And then how does this work?
We really switch off at a very granular level, like usually the sentence, maybe the paragraph level. There are a couple places where, you know, one or the other of us will write like an entire scene or a large chunk of a scene that's mostly involving like one character. But for the most part, it's a very kind of quick back and forth in a shared Google Doc. And so because the main character, Ren, is Marie's character from the game, that character is really kind of, she's got a good insight into that character. So that's the character that she tends to write. Although the more that we've written the novel version, the more I've kind of felt comfortable jumping in and writing from Ren's point of view rather than reactions to Ren's point of view or the world around Ren. And then the kind of two main characters that are my NPCs that are ported out from the game that she interacts with a lot that are also big POV characters are Derossi Vargo, who's this crime lord character, and then Gray Serato, who is this cop who's basically on the hunt for Ren, trying to expose her con. So, yeah, so that was the original breakdown. It's gotten, as we've gotten more comfortable writing and switching back and forth, we've even kind of, that division has even broken down a bit, and we're writing much more just as things come to us and swapping back and forth when we're like, all right, your turn. I'm the well is dry.
Yeah, but it really is. It's because of we did this originally as the game scenes where I didn't know what the NPCs were thinking or what they might do. And so I could really only control my character. And that same thing has more or less spilled over to the book. Now, we've both revised the text enough times and gone back and forth that like, barring a few instances where I could say, oh yeah, I know Alyssa wrote that line because I remember what I read. I was like, oh, that's good. Yeah. Like, I know that one's Alyssa's. But for the most part, we couldn't find the seams if you paid us.
Yeah, I there's so many places where I just honestly, I'm like, I don't know. I remember writing it together.
There are times where you're like, that's such a good line. And I say, you remember you wrote that one, right? And yeah, your response is, oh, did.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that somewhere along the line you realized you had 50,000 words into a story. Was it some point after that where you decided, okay, we need to outline, we need to have a directionality of plot? What was that like, trying to come up with the structure for the story?
Well, it's interesting because I think a lot of those 50,000 words aren't from book one. They're stuff that all ends up like being the meat of book two.
It's so the thing that I got from Sarah Reese Brennan, no relation, on Twitter at one point, she said the second book of a trilogy is for kissing. And I actually think, like, if you take kissing in the broader sense of developing the character relationships, I think that is very, very true. The second book of a trilogy, you have set everything up, and that's the good place to have the big changes and shifts of, like, alliance and enmity and so forth happening is in the second book. So yeah, a lot of the stuff that was the core of what we wanted to do is actually in the second book. Relatively little of it is in the first. There's a few beats. But a lot of it was, okay, we've got to figure out what's the road we're going to go on to get to that in book two. And there was a lot of outlining, far more than either of us tends to do on our own. We're both more usually on the discovery writer pantser end of things. That doesn't work when there's two people involved.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to communicate what you have floating nebulously in your head to the other person because they can't see that.
Yeah. And I should kind of emphasize that just because what we our original seed stuff, a lot of it ends up being in book two, does not mean that we make you wait all through book one for nothing happening. Like, we end up, like, there's a lot of really cool stuff that we didn't end up writing in scenes because it was already stuff that had been established in the game and played out, or it was stuff from Ren's backstory, things like that, that we got to really kind of explore and bring into fruition in book one. And so there's lots of good stuff in book one, too. There's lots of good kissing and emotion. Well, some kissing, lots of
there's
good emotion.
Kissing. Yeah.
Mostly the building up of some enmities and alliances.
And us. Yeah, yeah, and build up the sexual tension before you let anybody start to admit to it, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Well, I enjoy the build up, the setting of the foundation stones of whatever heist or caper is about to be perpetrated. And you can tell from how long it takes to set up some of these stones. It's like, oh, this isn't going to be a hit and run. This is going to be a long con. And you like... Me, anyway, I like mysteries, I like thrillers, I like capers, and seeing the characters set up these stones, I have actually gotten into the habit of watching some of the ancillary characters. I'm like, are you going to plant something in one of those stones that causes everything to fall apart?
Would we do that?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I love seeing how those things play out later when the protagonist realized, oh, wait, that wasn't supposed to happen. And seeing them figure their way out of it, either mentally or magically, is always fun. So
yeah.
I have not finished Mask of Mirrors yet, but I am looking forward to it. And that's why I have no idea, but when I first found out about this book, I thought it was a duology. So finding out that there was going to be a third book, I'm like, wait, I have to wait longer? What?
I was just going to say, the duology thing, there is actually a lot of duality built into the setting. And so there's a sense in which that would have been a perfectly logical thing to do. It's not what we're actually doing, because we're playing with a whole lot of number stuff on levels that probably people will mostly not even notice. It's just kind of there for us to entertain ourselves. But yeah, three is also an important number here.
I was going to say, it's really interesting, because I think one of the things I appreciate about these books is that there's a rereadability, because we kind of had things thought out well in advance, because we sat down and really did a lot of planning and plotting through and spreadsheets and all of that, that I really feel like people who finish the first book can go back to go back and do a reread and pick and like get things that they didn't get before. And after you read the second book, you're going to be seeing things in the first and second book, like things that we seeded and set up that are like Marie said, numerically pleasing to us, if nobody else.
Now, the challenge with that kind of thing is, like, we're both fans of, like, the good long-term build of something, yeah, where you can kind of see something growing over time rather than it being, like, I get very bored by the sort of TV that is extremely episodic, where it's one and done. I want something that's going to grow over time, but you do also have to make sure that you're growing it in a fashion where the early stages are also satisfying in their own right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, I got Babylon 5 pitched to me sort of in, I think, the worst way possible, because people would talk about how amazing it was. And like, if you go back and rewatch it, you see this thing in the first season was actually this setup for a thing that pays off in season 5, but season 1 is not that good.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually not great TV, except in hindsight, and it needs to work on its own. So I ended up bouncing off of B5 because it had been pitched to me as being so amazing, and then its first season really just isn't. So, you know, we're trying to avoid that. We're trying to make sure that we're giving you something tasty to chew on the whole way. And yeah, it's only later that you go, oh, okay. Yeah. I see where that was
which
headed.
Which I think also kind of fits with the whole con idea, because we do have short touch cons and quick capers, as well as the kind of long con that Ren is involved in, and kind of the longer, you know, plans that, you know, Vargo has going on, and that you know, Gray is working on and investigating. Like, we have both the kind of short-term short-term goals and long-term goals, basically.
Yeah.
So I don't want to spoil this, because this, for people who are fans of capers and epic fantasy setups or epic fantasy adjacent setups, they will enjoy this. But what for you guys was the most fun in this collaboration, aside from affecting the game you were playing?
I mean, the collaboration itself is a lot of fun. It actually, in some ways, I go back and I write my own stuff, and a part of me is going, oh, there's nobody around to help me keep the energy up.
Yeah. You know,
when I get stuck, it's on me to figure out how to fix that, rather than me being able to say, Alice, do you have any ideas?
Yeah.
So, to be honest, part of the reason the collaboration works is because in the past, when I've gotten stuck on one of my own novels, Alice is the person that I like fling the half-finished manuscript at and say, help me figure this out. So they think very similarly to me, and that is why the collaboration can work.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I think just, in general, like, I almost feel like this collaboration is a heightened version of that, because I've done the same with Marie, where I'm like, read this. I don't know. Is it working? Is it not working? Help me figure it out. Because it's not just the enthusiasm of, you know, I'm out of ideas, like, you know, help me figure this plot out, or let's figure this plot out together. But also just having somebody who is as invested in the story you're telling as you are, and who knows it as intimately and deeply as you are, is just a level beyond having like a really good beta reader or anything like that. And it's, I think it's a rarity for authors to be able to have somebody who you can kind of talk about a story that you care about on that level, because I think usually it's like, you're going to always love your story more than anybody else ever does. And so it's nice to have somebody else there who loves it as much as I do and is excited, as excited. It makes it not work almost ever.
And then within the story itself, like, we've got, I think, a very good balance of the stuff that we overlap on, where both of us really like, you know, the banter and such with the characters. But then there's also things where one of us has a strength over what the other one does. Like, Liz writes better flirtation and also better really foul things for a 12-year-old to say. Like, Arkady Bones dialogue, that's all a Liz. And then, like, I like the fight scene. So every time there's, like, some sword fighting, about like, Alyssa, do you mind if I just kind of run away with this for a little bit, because that's my shtick.
Like, go ahead and take it. And like, we might do a little pass on each other afterwards, but it's mostly just to enjoy what the other person wrote.
So it's probably a little early because you guys are still working on this trilogy, but do you think there would be another story in another world that you would collaborate on?
So
we might have been talking about that already. Part of it is, you know, we have built an incredibly rich world for this in ways that we try to weave into the story whenever there's an opportunity. You know,
that comes because we've both got background in anthropology. Both are very interested in that kind of depth of world building. Yeah.
So it'll be things like, okay, we need to have this scene happen. Well, what if we have it happen on this holiday so that we get some interesting background texture to what's going on, rather than it being set on a generic day, that kind of thing. And, you know, I've actually written a little bit of short fiction. There's going to be a short story, As Tight as Any Knot, that's going to come out in Beneath Ceaseless Skies on, I believe, New Year's Day. And I'm also working on a longer story for an anthology. I've got a couple other things brewing. But, you know, it seems a pity to only write the one series in a world that we poured so much work into. We do have a concept for another series that would build off, you know, a little bit of the consequences of this one, not in a direct sequel kind of way, but more in a, okay, so there's that thing which, like, this happened to it. And then when you think about that, there would be stuff that would happen as a result of that. Yeah. And so taking new characters, taking them to some new places, like, this trilogy is set entirely in Nadezhda, in the city that's at the head of this river delta. But we have this whole country of Vrasan that, like, gets referenced, and there are people who are from elsewhere in Vrasan, but we want to actually the chance to take the story into that and maybe even beyond its borders a little bit, like down to Isarn or something.
Yeah. Cool. And I think for that also, the vibe would be slightly different. It would be less the kind of, like, you know, intrigue, city caper, you know, fantasy of manners kind of a thing, and much more of a kind of fast paced adventure fantasy kind of a feel to it. A lot more Tomb Raider.
Okay, wow, you just threw Tomb Raider into that world, and I'm thinking, you know, ancient ruins on the other side of the continent, and people go spelunking.
It's a bit closer to the other side of the continent, but you're not wrong about the ancient ruins thing.
Yeah, or the spelunking.
We both were archaeologists, so honestly, like, yeah, if we turn this into some kind of archaeological adventure, it'll be pretty on brand.
Yeah.
Wow. You've got archaeology and anthropology, and yeah, those are good foundations for world building. So I am looking forward to that.
And one of the other things I don't think Marie mentioned, but she's also been posting Twitter kind of feeds of some of the folklore that we developed for the world.
Because we come up with all stuff that doesn't go anywhere into the books, except maybe in like that one passing reference in a single line. And like, yeah, but we know the entire folktale that's referring to, so let's put that up on Twitter. Yeah. I actually just posted one today, i.e. the day that we're recording, which is not the day this will air, but...
Oh, that's cool, because that gives fans who are looking forward to being able to read the book little background, so when they trip across it in the story, they go, oh yeah, I know about that. Nice.
Yep.
very nice. Yep. So we will have links to you guys' Twitter feeds. Where can people follow those and find out more about what you are each individually and collaboratively doing.
I guess I'll go first. I am online at swantower.com. Twitter is swan_tower, because without the underscore was already taken by somebody else.
Sacrilege.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And on Patreon at swan_tower. And I will say the Patreon is called New Worlds. And if you're somebody who likes the rich world building kind of side of things, that Patreon is entirely about world building for science fiction and fantasy.
And I'm at Aliss Helms everywhere. So Aliss Helms. com and Aliss Helms on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And then together we are macarrick.com and ma_carrick,
yes,
on Twitter.
And that's where that's the account where you can find the folklore threads and such.
Yeah.
Nice. So do you guys have anything other projects coming up individually that you would like to let people know about?
I've somehow run into having a very busy stretch of time, because I actually had a book out in August from Tachyon called Driftwood, which is sort of a fix-up of some short stories that I'd been publishing over the years with like a frame story put around them to make a coherent thing out of it. And then I've got another novel coming out under my own name, I think 2 weeks after The Mask of Mirrors hits the shelves. That is The Night Parade of 100 Demons, which, if you know your Japanese folklore, that phrase may ring a bell. It's a novel for the setting Legend of the Five Rings, which is heavily based on historical Japan. But it's not something where you need to know the game in order to read the novel. It's just an investigation into supernatural disturbances in an isolated mining village.
Nice.
And I don't have anything coming out anytime soon other than these books, but I do have a couple of novels. The Adventures of Mr. Mystic. The first one is The Dragons of Heaven. The second one is The Conclave of Shadow, which are kind of a cross up between pulp adventure and Shansha fantasy, Chinese fantasy. So very fun and quick and light, I think. I believe actually there is a pull quote on the cover from Marie Brennan that says a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, speaking of you know, that whole throwing manuscripts at each other going help, etc. But I think that those scales are still heavily weighted toward I have thrown way more books at Aliss than they have at me.
True. So. Although the books I have thrown at you have been a lot longer, because I tend to...
Nice. Not The Adventures of Mr. Mystic, but yeah. Aliss does have a project which is even longer than The Mask of Mirrors and is in the process of being broken up into smaller units.
Yes, because one thing I am learning with even the early reactions of this one is that I am in a minority in greatly preferring very long, heavy books. That does not
seem
to be...
There's an audience for that, though. Like, I mean,
there is an audience.
Like Brandon Sanderson or Pat Rothfuss, yeah, or Neal Stephenson. Like, it's not as if... And like I said, we're not even record setters, honestly.
No.
We're nowhere near that.
Have you seen the last two books Tad Williams put out? OMG.
Yeah.
No, but I'd seen earlier books of his, and if these are even longer, I shudder to think. I mean, when I read To Green Angel Tower, I read it in paperback, where it had to be split up into two volumes, because they literally couldn't bind it as one volume.
No, the last two books, the arcs of them look like they would require someone to get into physical weight training to be able to hold and read.
There's a reason I read Neal Stephenson in ebook. I'm just saying.
I was going to say, my wrists are very grateful for ebook, because yeah, it does make things a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. I prefer print, but not for all authors.
Yeah.
No. Mr. Williams was very, very prolific with those last two. I'm like, really? Dude. I think Empire of Grass was one. I don't remember the other one, but they're huge. The arc came in a box that you would normally get like four different books from the publisher in, and
yeah,
it was just the one.
And I'm just give me more.
No, there you go.
I will share with your audience, when The Mask of Mirrors was being shopped around, there was one publisher that both of our agents are working on this project. Our agent sent it to this one publisher, not realizing, because it's a fairly new press, that company caps out at books that are like 80 or 90,000 words long.
Wow.
And ours in that draft was like 220, I think. It's shorter now. We've pared it down. But so there was just no world in which that was ever going to be something that editor could buy.
Yeah.
But he wrote back saying, you know, I wish I could, because how often do you read something that's 200,000 words long but reads like it's more, you know, 80 or 90? Usually it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. We're like, this book is not physically large, and yet it drags on forever. So We do try to keep it as like tight and fast moving and make sure that every bite of what you eat has something tasty in it.
Nice.
Yeah. If a scene isn't doing like at least three things at once, it got cut.
Yeah.
Or combined with something else. But
yeah.
Well, like I said, I am looking forward to finishing this one and diving into the second and third volumes when they are available.
And
And the
that's
second
one of the
book
things I was
is.
going to say is that the you don't have to wait that long because this one was delayed a little bit. The second book will also be coming out in 2021 in November,
Nice,
so
nice.
you only have like 10-ish months to wait.
Well, I was going to ask you guys how you were keeping busy during COVID lockdowns, but it seems like you've been writing a lot.
Yeah, we wrote the
Basically.
second book over the summer.
Yeah, and actually, right when the lockdowns began was when I went, oh crap, I'm wildly behind where I ought to be on the Night Parade of 100 Demons. And so, when everybody else is like, I have all this free time and I have learned to make sourdough, I'm like, can't talk, I'm writing.
Yeah, and you basically went like you finished Night Parade, you had like a week or two off, and then we dove right into.
I think it was about a week. Yeah, I did not have much time there before moving around.
Yeah, and so then we wrote the second book in about 4 months, which is about the same amount of time that we took to write the first book. We got through them pretty quickly.
Nice.
Yeah, the first book we basically did NaNoWriMo for 4 months straight, and we had
Yeah.
luck.
There's a visual. Wow, that's a lot of words. Cool.
Mean, divide it up between the two of us, but even so, that's
Yeah, but
not
even
half the
so.
work.
I was gonna say, because even though it's divided up between the two of us, we're both still writing the same amount of time because we're kind of like going back and forth in the document, and so you can't really go off and do a lot else.
And all the time spent on coordination and planning and everything.
Yeah, we have weekly planning meetings that, are fun.
Awesome. Well, I would like to thank you both for your time and your indulgence in sharing the actual joy of
Thank you.
putting to that together this collaboration.
Thank you.
And I would like to mention for Marie that I hosted a podcast, or actually, I was the co-host for a podcast about Babylon 5 that went about 300 episodes. So if you ever want to talk Babylon 5 or listen to Tim Callender and myself wax poetic and interview various cast members, crew members, directors,
Oh, nice.
producers, BabylonPodcast.com is the place to go. And you know where I am. If you have questions, I will always answer Babylon 5 questions because I absolutely love that show. And
Now
there
I feel
are.
guilty for slagging on
Oh,
it. I was
no.
gonna say
There.
I didn't really say anything because I really like Babylon 5.
It's the kind of thing where I think if I went back and tried the later seasons, I would actually like it better. But the disjunct between the way it got talked up to me and the way I felt about season one watching it on my own really just kind of broke things.
And I think that's the problem. You probably should not have watched it on your own. You should probably have had someone, online or with there with you, because unless you have watched the first three seasons or two and a half seasons, you cannot jump people in at season one without plenty of warning.
It's much more like watching a novel. Yeah.
It is, it
Than
is.
most Western television
Yeah.
is. And I think with the same kind of really rich payoff.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But again, thank you both. We'll have links to everything about what you're working on.
Sounds excellent.
Thank you so much for your time.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching. Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
I do highly recommend that you check out The Mask of Mirrors by M.A. Carrick, Marian Ellis. And I, for one, am looking forward to reading more in this series. I'm looking forward to a lot of new books coming out in 2021. I have to list them all because I don't remember all of them right at this moment, but The Unbroken by C.L. Clarke is one. Looking forward to talking about S.V. Divya has a book coming out, I think, in March called Machinehood. You can find the previews of that on that website. David Weber and Chris Kennedy have a sequel to Out of the Dark called Into the Light, where the, well, it's been 10 years since Out of the Dark came, so I'm not sure how big a spoiler it is, but all I'm going to say is vampires in space, taking vengeance on behalf of humanity against extraterrestrial invaders. How can you not love that? We'll be talking very soon with Karen Osborne about Architects of Memory and the follow-up, Engines of Oblivion, which I believe comes out at the end of January. Even so, just a short handful of the stories I'm looking forward to. But what stories are you looking forward to reading or listening to in 2021? Let me know. Shoot me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. You can listen to Writers After Dark through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let folks know you are enjoying the interviews here, the reviews here, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Write After Dark. That's W-R-I-T-E After Dark. And of course, the website, writersafterdark.com. Check out the other interviews we've done, the book reviews, the audiobook reviews, and the occasional commentary. This show and all of the shows in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe are kept online by your generous support. So thank you, all of you, for your donations and your pledges. If you'd like to help with these geeky efforts here, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. You can join a tier, be eligible for a perk. Every month, a new email address is pulled out of the hat, and that person gets to choose a book, an advanced copy, a finished copy, a DVD, a Blu-ray, sometimes even a 4K. Lots and lots of goodies we get to review here at Writers After Dark and Slice of Sci-Fi, and I don't have space to keep them all. So my generous supporters get first dibs. That's all I'm saying. If you'd like to support, but would prefer not to commit to a monthly pledge, the link you can use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. The theme music here is provided by Cybin Quest featuring Shay Dawn. You can find links to other compositions of theirs through links on the website. And that'll do it for this episode. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.